Hello and welcome back to JLXP, episode 42 all time, going back to the start of 2020. But more importantly, the LCS Week 5 recap and the return of Raz LCS.
Let's go.
After a perfect 5-0 prediction on Saturday, how did your predictions go on Sunday?
Pretty good, actually, now that I think about it. I think the TSM versus Golden Guardians one did not pan out. But outside of that one, I think across the board. So this has been a good week for me. They have not been good in the past, but I'm on the up and up.
You are. For those of you who don't know, I had my worst predictions day in history. There might have been a day in 2018 when I was on Countdown with Mark that I had an 0-5. If I did, I blocked it from memory.
Yeah.
But I've been toying with the idea of just doing a reverse Raz day, like ever since the start of the year. And I pulled the trigger on Saturday, and you have 5-0.
Good reason. There's a good reason for it. I've had some catastrophic days.
it was really bad timing. Luckily, I'm just the guest on the analyst desk, and they're not tracking it year round. So it's like it never happened. Really, next week I can go 5-0, and I can just lord it over you just like last week never happened.
Missed opportunities. Yeah. We definitely need to just do a full split tracker and then do the wall of shame at the end of the split. It may not favor me. It's probably not going to favor me, but it's crazy. That day was hilarious because I understood the reasoning. When I was first doing my predictions for that day, I was like, on paper, this team, like, IMT's on the up and up. They can take down an EG that's like not very consistent, especially since IMT won the last time they played. TSM is always a question mark because they have Huni and Spica and they can just have a good day. But nope, the 60%, the 64, you always won for the 60.
IMT EG, EG wins. TSM FlyQuest, FlyQuest wins. TL 100 Thieves, TL wins. C9 GG, C9 wins. Dig CLG, Dig wins. You're 5-5.
Yeah.
Mistakes were made. Anyway,
it happens.
When the whole week is said and done, we have TL who went 2-0, we have C9 who went 2-0, and we have FlyQuest who went 2-0. So we're now left with standings where it's looking like Cloud9 and TL are running away with the league. Where I wanted to start was basically a discussion of both teams kind of we can state the obvious things of why they're successful, maybe some of the things that aren't as obvious that we haven't had a chance to talk about, and then also maybe some possible ways that they could lose, because guaranteed, one of these teams will lose next week. They play each other next Sunday. True. So it's a really hype matchup. But who do you want to start discussing? C9 or TL?
Probably TL, because that's the easier conversation.
Right, let's go.
When you watch the game versus IMT, they actually just should have lost that one. IMT, like, they had firm control. They were making mistakes that were losing them Drakes. And then, you know, Revenge had his moment in the enemy base. And it ends up turning into Soul, Ocean Soul for this team. And I mean, they just made one very silly mistake that actually happens quite frequently in the LPL, where a team tries to go for an end and it wasn't really well coordinated. And I mean, Revenge, I saw him on Twitter actually, because I like the new players that are able to own up to their mistakes publicly. Because A, they're able to do that internally, they're able to do that publicly, and they can take that scrutiny. And I love that ability from Revenge, because yes, he had a fantastic game, but you're always remembered by the public for the clutch moments, like how it ends.
True.
So like to kind of round that back to Team Liquid. Yeah, the Team Liquid didn't have a clean week. And I think a lot of that comes to the constant roster changes between like for Core JJ, and finally he's back.
Right.
And that also, they are a more risk-taking team. Like they're willing to experiment with picks. I kind of mentioned that the last time we were here. And so like we got to see the Shyvana there for Bwipo. He's played the Viego top lane before. And like whenever you try something experimental, especially if you're at the top of the table and you're more willing to do it, if it fails, it fails. And they don't care about that. But that also hurts you and Mark. That they're for sure going to lose at least one of these games because of it. So I think that's one of their weaknesses. The weaknesses during the regular season is the fact that they're a more aggressive team. They're more willing to take fights. And the drafts are, they're more willing to be experimental. And as much as it sucks in best of ones, it's for sure going to benefit them in a best of five. So that's a later discussion.
I think one thing that is also interesting about both these teams is they lead the league in having the shortest average game time, which
there we go.
It surprised me the most for Team Liquid, because we've had all of the vanilla memes on the analyst desk for the last day and a half where vanilla is great and Team Liquid picks the reliable thing and then wins. But they really don't with Bwipo, right? I'm sure if we look at their overall team comp and how many unique picks a team has brought out, Bwipo alone puts them in that conversation with Rengar and Pantheon and Shyvana today. They just do a lot of different stuff. The player that I know you want to talk about, but I'm going to start with, is Santorin. Because everybody knows Bjergsen coming back is huge, and he's been good but not great. Bwipo was my mid-season MVP, or like very close to. It's been him and Berserker basically every week that I've danced between the two. Hansama, CoreJJ, people are saying is like the best bot lane, but like here's Santorin, who while he was good last year, like I think last year was actually an off year for him, in and out of the lineup, battling some health problems, but he has been ridiculously good. And Team Liquid, by the way, has gotten First Blood in 91% of their games, which is the highest rate in the league. Yeah. Today's was a little ridiculous as well. Santorin couldn't have been involved in it because it was a bot lane gank in mid lane at level one. So
true.
But yeah, what do you think about Santorin? Why is he so good?
It's incredible. I said it on broadcast. I think he's having the best time in his career. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it really helps when you do have players who are incredibly experienced, that are on top of their game, and also just want to play for jungle. Like when, you know, you can look at Bjergsen's past, of course he worked with Santorin, but a lot of the times like working with the jungle is something that he's really, you know, worked on pretty consistently. And Bwipo, former jungler, I guess, when he was with Fnatic, and also someone that always is, if you hear him talk about the game, he always wants to know how to help the people around him. It's very easy to get gank timings with people who are pretty much understand their lane state fully. Yeah. So I think like that helps him a lot. And also, he has just been somebody that takes the ball and runs with it, is how I felt with it. And it reminds me of 2018 Invictus Gaming. Right now, saying Ning is a bad word because he's that kind of a player, right? Okay. But in 2018, he had all winning lanes. And so he went... like, and they had, I think at the time, the fastest win times in the LPL at the time. Mm-hmm. And it was because if he understood, he had great lanes and he went further with it. He took more risks. He was willing to dive more frequently, right? And if you have a Bjergsen Zilean that's tagged alongside you and you're a Xin Zhao or a Viego, and you just dive because you have full confidence that if you're winning a fight, you can go further and take more and more. Now, of course, this comparison is only from that perspective because I think he's smart enough to know when to play back in losing fights, right? And I just think that he has a complete understanding of the current meta, and their team fights have just been so solid because A, if they're playing around him, then he knows how to take the best fights and roll with it, and if they're playing around someone else, he's been the best facilitator. That Trundle game, I think it was in week 3, where he's like, okay, I'm taking red and going pathing straight bot for Hansama and CoreJJ to get them a level 2 kill, and then I'll just path accordingly. He's just creative around that.
Did you pay much attention to their player cams during the game today?
I have not. No, I did not do
this
that.
This is maybe a bit of a weird point, but sometimes I just like paying close attention to player cams and also how the team is reacting, like immediately after the game, to see if they're pissed, if they're happy, if they're crushed, any of these things, and there was a moment where Revenge killed the inhibitor and killed the Nexus turret and then killed the other Nexus turret and then killed Bjergsen. And then like, it was disaster, right? Yeah. It was like, wow, TL is done for in this game. But I looked at their player cams and like Santorin was smiling. Yeah. Like to me, that was just such a good energy for the team. They knew it was awful, but they were not pissed or tilted about it. It was kind of like, oh no, let's find the next solution to this big problem we've created. And then when they won the game, Core kind of runs over to Bwipo, basically gives him like a hug. I see huge smiles throughout the rest of the team. And there's just so many different ways you can react to a win like that.
Yes.
A lot of teams would sit at their desk, slowly get up, kind of shake their heads, you know, waddle over to the bow, be like, I guess we won, but I'm kind of pissed about it. But TO was just happy. And I am not of the opinion that you need to be this like perfectionist in spring split in order to have a chance at Worlds. Like that's the energy I want to see. So I think that's a really promising like team culture that is going on there that I was happy to see.
Yeah, actually true. There's like certain levels to this where like if you're so insanely confident about, you know, the appearance with your teammates and all these things that you can kind of laugh about it, know that you all feel deeply about it and that you'll get to it when you're reviewing the game and that you'll get past it. That's pretty fun. That's great. Cause like the opposite is 100 Thieves, a team that like they'll have like a run. They'll do really damn well. Like I think it was like last split in the beginning. And even, and if there are any problems in the game, if it wasn't a clean victory, they'll like, even in the interviews, they'll kind of brood on those mistakes because they're perfectionists at what they do. And they like still feel deeply about it, which is fair. But like there's like they definitely can feel tilted at like mistakes like that. Yeah. Whereas, this is a different team for sure.
And that's just an observation from player cams. There's obviously a lot left to interpretation, but it's what I saw. Cloud9, they're pretty good. Pretty good. Longest winning streak in the LCS, 6-0. The Summit hype train was at an all-time high. And then he started the game like 0-4 on Gwen. I want to get to that later. Let's talk about some of the strengths of them, because every week it feels like there is a new standout player on the team. Week 1 and 2 for me, it was like, holy crap, Berserker is just too insane. And then Summit had a string of games where he was just completely putting his stamp on the game, multiple solo kills, fending off ganks, 1v2, hard carrying team fights. And then this week, Blabber wins player of the week. He starts like 7-0 on Volibear and goes Sunfire, Frozen Heart, and just carries the game. So, and by the way, throughout all this, I think if you looked at Fudge's KDA, it's like incredible. He's just a supportive of the team, but he's fitting in really well when things are happening well around him. So I'd say everyone except Fudge and maybe Winsome has had like massive standout moments. And for Cloud9 fans, I think even though there's that huge disappointment of the LS controversy and fiasco, but everything looks to be like good in game right now.
Yeah, I think one thing that C9 has always had coming in from last split is a really critical and pretty deep coaching staff. That when they have mistakes that or bad weeks or something, like they can always look to review it. And they're pretty public about that. And this time around, like the build of the team is just good. Mm-hmm. Like the build from offseason, taking the chance on Berserker. A lot of people, the hype was there because, of course, directly from LS and just people who had watched this player play in solo queue and, you know, slightly from his time in T1.
Yeah.
The amateur, was it?
Yeah.
And then, of course, like we already know who Summit is. Like when he first came into the LCK, he was dominant, and he's always been still like one of the better top laners in that league. So, like the fact that he comes in and starts rolling, while still having a carry jungler and Blabber, this team's just gonna be who they are, and I think they'll continue to be top two until maybe when 100 Thieves, specifically their bot lanes, gets into a consistent place again. Because like some days is getting better and better, and it would be nice to have those top three teams be competitive. But right now, it just seems to be Cloud9 will always have those three players perform. And Blabber, I think specifically this game versus EG, was in a special position to carry because he was going up against the blind pick Kha'Zix, which I hate. and then Danny came out with his tweet. Did you see Danny's tweet, by the way?
No, what was it?
I'm going to read it.
Okay.
I'm going to it was, you rarely see tweets like this where the player kind of talks about the comp.
Okay. I'm bracing. Yeah. I'm bracing for it.
Here it is. Aphelios into Ezreal, Karma, Gwen with Ryze, Volibear. Better 2v2 mid versus Syndra, Kha'Zix, and gets priority to shift into side lane. Incredible dive threat ults. Yeah. I pray that anyone playing the game versus as my POV would suffer too.
Oh no, Danny.
GGC9, good draft.
Danny.
I have never seen a player just roast the draft in detail in my life on Twitter. So like, yeah, I mean, that's, tell me how you're feeling. So like, when you see that, and he's able to just win the 2v2 mid, and then when they find windows and they're able to just dive bot lane on Bulbasaur's timer, he was in a special position to carry that game. So like, that was probably the like chef's kiss of tweets I've seen all like in my time, just period.
Yeah, it's just like a lot of information too.
Yes.
The only thing, yeah, it's Fudge replies, Coach Diff happens. Woo!
Oh my god.
Woo!
All right. We need to talk. That was good though.
Yeah,
that was funny.
That makes me want to pull up their draft from the day before, because I think didn't they have Ezreal Karma the day prior?
So,
they did. Ezreal Karma is pretty broken, by the way.
Yeah.
For some reason, Karma stopped getting bans this week. And we saw a lot more Ezreal Karma. So let me double check. I'm right there. EG versus Immortals. Yeah, they just 2-3 Ezreal Karma. And they're the ones with Ryze. So they just got their draft stolen. And they're like, or large portions of it. And they're like, well, this sucks.
Yep. The Kha'Zix really surprised me on this one. But also just like the fact that we already hear the tweet basically says how they can't play through mid and all that.
Yeah.
But yeah, like Cloud9, generally speaking, will always have pretty insightful drafts, have a clear identity, as you mentioned. Like Fudge will support either Blabber or his side laners who are just consistent carries. And that'll be their key in playoffs. Like when we get to that point, that'll be something that they will always be able to pull in their back pocket. Because sure, like most teams are like, oh, you have a carry top laner, fine. We'll deny that through bans or through like trying to kind of soften the blow. Same thing if you have like a bot lane, okay, perfect. We'll draft accordingly or play accordingly and maybe involve Twisted Fate so we can have like a numbers advantage. This team, you don't really have you won't have an answer, I feel like. And that's going to be something that's going to be exciting to watch when we get to that point in playoffs.
The answer that I have right now.
I'm ready.
Is, it's not going to be conclusive. Ban Gnar.
Okay.
And ban Jace. Just get those two champions out of there. I want to see it. And I don't think that it's not that Summit can't play other champions, but like even looking at 2021 in LCK, 29 Gnar games, next most played is 13 for Renekton. And that was like the Renekton Gnar meta almost all year. Gnar can still be meta, and his Jace is super cracked and also is the Gnar counter. So it's like he's been getting by so well, mostly playing Gnar, and then playing Jace into Gnar. And he is the best Jace, and he is the best Gnar, but his Gwen today was definitely not the best Gwen. It was like 10-10-6, like a solid 6. So I just want to see Summit have to do more of that, because Blabber had the huge carry performance, and they had the team comp advantage, according to Danny, and also I think according to us talking through the draft. So I just want to see him been put in more uncomfortable situations, because he's the type of top laner, and Whippo even talked about this when he joined us on the desk. Like, he is so masterful at the matchups that he knows. But get him out of the matchups that he knows, and maybe he's a weaker player. So if I'm TL, that's where I'm attacking.
I'm booknoting that for sure.
Yeah.
Weird. That's a good point. I think that's something to look forward to. Teams can already kind of address that in the next few games, and I think that will be fun to see. Inevitably, like whenever we get to playoff time, there will be a patch change that really challenges the top lane.
Yeah.
So I expect that to happen, especially with how prevalent right now Gnar is, and a lot of it can just be because of how Hallbreaker just like deals with a lot of his worst matchups. So I'm sure things will change where he will have to be challenged. And I think that'll be fun. That'll be fun. I'm interested. I think he's too good of a player that it would be a surprise if he's not practicing the other picks in that time.
Mm-hmm. It's true. He's a great player. Just got to see it. Got to see it. Got to prove it to him.
Got to see it.
Okay. FlyQuest. Bounce back week.
True.
Bounce back week. 0-3.
This is a good week for them.
2-0. They're up to 7-4. They beat TSM and Dig. Both of them pretty close ones, though. I was casting the Dig game. That was a good game. kind of start to finish.
It was. I for sure think that that was Diggs' game to lose, like win. I think they were in a really good position. And that last team fight was, let's not Malfalti the Nautilus solo.
Yeah.
Go for it.
Just overall, for those of you who missed the game, this was, River got Jarvan again for the first time in a while. They had Malphite top into a mostly AD composition, like Hecarim Aphelios, Tryndamere, with a zillion mid and a Nautilus support on FlyQuest. But the way the game mostly played out was the Tryndamere kept the Malphite pretty pushed in, and Malphite never really got like a good Malphite armor stack fight. FlyQuest like stole a few dragons and clutched a few team fights towards the end and just kind of won. What was it, like a 37-minute game? It was pretty long.
Yeah, it was a long one. And I felt like the composition from Dignitas was like in a special place where I don't think Aphelios should have the space to walk up to, but like they're just the backline for Dignitas. Yeah. And in the end of the day, like FlyQuest just played it better. I think Johnson for sure had a good game, and for sure Kumo too. So like the team itself, even hearing from Kumo's interview, he felt confident throughout. And I mean, that level of confidence you have from just like your teammates around you, just having a clear direction and idea, how do they want to play fights? And so even if you're, you know, compositionally behind or something like that, whatever that may be, or behind in the specific time in the game, if you have confidence in your individual talent and all these things in yourselves, like you can just clutch out these games. And Jose Diodo has been clutching out a lot of these games recently. Johnson has had a lot of great team fights on his Jinx or Aphelios. So this could be a clear direction for FlyQuest. This is an easier week. So like going into the next week, when they face, yes, they face CLG, but when they face 100 Thieves, that to me is like the question. Because when I made that bet with you.
Okay, Jack, 12 and 6.
It was 12 and 6. They two losses and I'm doomed. Well, yeah, close enough. Three losses, I would say. We're getting close to it.
I said they need to be worse than 12 and 6. So you have three losses to go.
Yeah, three losses. So I have an extra padding there.
3-7. They got to go 4-3.
But they have a lot of tough games. I would say week 7, for sure week 8. Like week 7, they go up against Team Liquid, and you know, we'll see how that goes. And then week 8, they're super weak. C9, EG, IMT. So we're getting there. Okay. We're getting close. Okay. Either way, they should be happy with their current trajectory. They're still in a really good spot for where people expected them to be. I'm just trying to not eat spicy peppers. I don't want that in my mouth. I'm trying my hardest out here.
I want to address a few FlyQuest fans. People think I hate FlyQuest. Some people think I hate FlyQuest. I don't hate FlyQuest.
Mm-hmm.
I just think they've been overperforming. They're mean, which is why I've been doing this. And then secondarily, totally different topic. Do you want to talk a little bit about pronunciations of player names? Because I have done a bad job with this and I have reasons. I have excuses.
Okay, I'm ready.
With excuses. So they're jungler. I messed it up on cast today, and I still don't have full confidence. It's Jose Diodo.
No, Jose Diodo.
Jose Diodo.
Yes.
The reason I messed this up.
Yes.
Is because when I was on TL, and he was LATAM jungler, we have Dodo on TL. He's the GM of TL, former player, was also a manager at the time. All of us were just like, Dodo, you're on TV again. Like, it's Jose Dodo. We never called him by his name. We were just saying that it was Dodo playing. So I've always, over a year, I called him Jose Dodo. So every time that's in my head, and then I'm like, oh no, there's a difference. In the moment, I mess it up. So I apologize. I'm working on it. But if I call him Jose Dodo, hopefully that's okay. Jose, say it again.
Jose Diodo.
Jose Diodo. I'll get it.
Close enough. There you go.
They're
and I'm sure someone's going to come out there and kill me and be like, actually, but that's how we said it consistently on the broadcast.
He's too good. Yes, Jose Diodo.
Yes.
I apologize. They're mid laner.
Oh.
I think Takui is as close as I'm going to get it.
Yes.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we got some advice at the start of the year that we should say Takui because we weren't going to be able to say it properly. And if you listen to the way Takui says it, he does say it with a French accent.
Yeah.
So again, I'm sorry, but we're trying. We're trying on these.
And some of these team fights, look, I'm going to be honest. There has been what's it called? Some of these team fights, especially when it can be really fast paced and you want to like kind of move with either your play by play, it's going to be hard to say it perfectly. Yeah. Especially like it's going to be difficult. I've had a few of those names when I was in the LPL. There's like, okay, guys, this is not going to be possible to say it properly. And it is riding on the line of like another word. And so I do not want to mess it up. So we might want to change things up. So I've got some good stories on this one. In fact, I think people will know Crisp. Crisp is a player, the support player. Great name. Mm-hmm. Wasn't that name for a while. Because before, when he was playing with LWX, his name was LQS. This is just basically their initials.
Okay.
And then he changes to Pinus. And it is very close, very close to another word.
You don't and say.
And I was like, guys, I'm okay with myself. I could probably say it because I'm a color caster. I can be more calm in those situations. The play-by-plays are going to mess up. We need to plead with the league
to make for a change name.
Yes, we need to make our case here. So it's just I have a lot. I've always had like kind of those funny names, or at least like different names in which you kind of have to say it properly, work on it, all these things. Yeah. Takui is, I was on stream saying Takui, and people were still saying that it was incorrect.
Which it is. Like, it's actually wrong, but it's hard to say it the right way.
Yeah. I will always say my life, my name was said incorrectly at times too. So it's just
Roz.
And also like Brento is a pretty easy name.
Right.
So people will be able to say Brento. Growing up, like a name that I had internally, like my first name technically was like Allo Challo.
Ooh,
but like good luck with that one.
Yeah.
But that one's fine. Brento, we're good with that.
Yeah. And I probably shouldn't bring this up, but like the funniest thing to me is like I've been struggling with Takui and trying to get like a French accent at the end. Mm-hmm. But FlyQuest posted this video with like, I think it was like their social media manager on the phone. Yeah. She was like, Takui, how do you say your name? And she's like laughing because people can't do it. And then he says it differently. And it's just like, oh, okay. So even people within FlyQuest aren't getting the accent correct. And Takui does not seem bothered. So I don't know. We talk about this way more than we should.
It is.
I wanted to get it into the public sphere.
I know. Remember, Abadaga. Remember, Abadaga. Also coming from the LEC Abadaga. In Europe, people always said Abadage, and then he comes to the LCS, and we are really, we care a lot about getting it correct and just making sure that we're saying Abadaga.
Yeah.
But it's even his teammates call him Abadage, so you're like, okay, let's, I don't know, happens.
Yeah, same thing happened with Aika and Aika.
Yes.
Yeah, because we're just like, no, it's Aika. And then that week, it was like a teammate of him be like, yeah, so Aika. And we're like, God, just be consistent. But it happens to all of us. We're moving on. For people that don't like the name talk, I apologize. We've talked about C9TL, FlyQuest. I think you always have to talk about TSM. It's just the nature of the LCS. They've been the main character for so many years. They won a game. Technically,
we did it.
But you wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, your thoughts on TakeOver, because you said it. I'll just let you go. What do you think about TakeOver?
Yeah, like I think TakeOver is a talented player. He has a specific champion pool, like Ryze, Ahri, Sylas, like basically playmakers. and it's like technically hasn't worked out on the academy side, but like I do think individually it's a talent you want to go and grow and cultivate. Same could be said for Kaido. I think Kaido definitely had a bad week, the last one.
Yeah.
I mean, generally speaking, has just had like a poor split. But a lot of those are just team-wide issues. And so like my biggest concern was that, okay, we're starting to see TSM kind of play the style that we kind of always expected them to play.
True.
We always kind of expected them to play a scrappy style, kind of like more centered around how the LPL would play, right? Lee Sin, in this case, like Sylas, Ryze, basically playmakers. And just like not be afraid to take a fight. And then they come into the split and they play very meta. They play like, you know, front to back, control mages, Victor dominant for a Kaido. You're like, okay, so we're kind of, that's fine if you want to change your style. Mm-hmm. But then they change their kind of style every week. And sure, people will naturally do that if you don't find success, right? But it's just weird to me that we changed the style finally to be kind of representative of how I would thought they would be playing at the beginning and how the players naturally want to play. And then We swap out Kaiduo for TakeOver, who deservingly got a player of the game here, I'm pretty sure. So he actually had a really good game, him and Huni, like, carried.
Yeah.
It's like, we do need – it's just weird that we're giving him the time and space to play, or at least Kaiduo, to, like, develop and play on stage, but not in how I would imagine to be the most comfortable comps to work around. So it's just those are just the things that I would have a problem with TSM at the moment. There's a lot of issues that currently arose from them that they're trying to squash. But, yeah, I hope – that Kaiduo starts performing in Academy, much like Shen Yi has been, and that he finds that level of comfort to come back onto the main stage. But we're nearing the end of the split, and so, like, I don't know how much time, exactly. I don't know how much time that they would have or would want to give him.
If they lose one more game, it is their worst split ever.
Period.
They're on the clock.
Yeah.
I think they will lose another game. Bold call.
The bold call. Like, that today should have been that game. Golden Guardians actually just should have won. There are numerous moments where, like, A, they had the easier scaling composition. They also had, like, what would be the play of the day.
The Gnar package. Yes. That was such a game changer.
Yeah.
Gnar ulting a perfect, like, you want to Gnar ult people into a wall to then package over.
Yeah,
you want to do that, and then the package just knocks them over the wall, and they're like, "Well,
yeah." Sweet. Not a lot of people would know that interaction, or not a lot of people would expect it, especially when you have what is a second and a half or so of just the reaction time to that Gnar ultimate.
Yeah,
I think it's a second or less than a second in which, of course, Gnar ulti comes down, and you want to be able to follow up on it. Naturally, you want the full damage of package.
Yeah,
and you don't think of that it might send him over the wall. I don't think anyone would think that. I think anyone that is put in that position would do the same thing. And it changes the game.
I couldn't believe it when I saw it. I'm glad we went over it in the replay. That probably would have given Baron to Golden Guardians. And then from there, I think they probably outscaled. But I had a different thought. Bit of a tangent.
I'm ready.
I do like how TSM drafted this week.
Yes.
Varus Tahm Kench trying to dominate lane. Graves to be able to push in top lane. The other game, even the Rek'Sai, didn't work out, but I liked it because I think when you are struggling, you need to have a chance of some kind.
Yeah.
So if they just pick overwhelmingly stronger early game team comps, at least they'll have a place to play from. And they haven't had a place to play from, like, pretty much all year. So I love the pivot to go, like, hard early game. It's actually what we did at TL at Worlds when we were 0-2 and NA was doing, like, brutal, terrible 2020 Worlds. And it's how we turned it around. It's like, just pick stronger early game and an ability to pull the trigger, and you're going to beat a lot of teams.
Yeah.
So I like that. I like that from TSM.
Another thing too is they're just picking transferable skills from, you know, one comp to another. So, like, both of their games, it's very clear that they're trying to play through mid, and it makes it so much easier for TakeOver and Spica to be like, okay, this game and this week of practice, this is how we want to play the game, and we can just work at it because we know that regardless of the comp that we get, that's just how we're going to play it. Regardless if it's Ryze, Ahri, Sylas in this game, that they're just going to do this thing so they can get it done properly. And they were pretty close at that. I felt like this was just something that TakeOver was able to get a large advantage on. Obviously, there are going to be issues that if the game goes too long and you don't have a sizable enough lead that you're in this meta, you're just going to get outscaled and you'll lose team fights. Mm-hmm. So you need to be a little more creative. And they got picked off at times. Like Shen Yi got picked off in, you know, blue side jungle.
Oh yeah.
Huni got picked off top. A lot of the times they were getting picked off they were just running it down. But at least you're learning those lessons. You don't want to learn it this late. but at least these are things. It's like, this is what we want to do with this comp. These are transferable lessons that we're getting from all the scrims that we've had and the stage days. So, like, I guarantee they're going to just be better next week unless they just switch off of these comps or, you know, decide that, no, actually, your son is coming back again. Like, we just need consistency.
Yeah. I actually got to point it out a lot during the cast, the specific ways in which TSM is getting disconnected. Like, it is a concept that is not new to any team, and it's way easier said than done. But when you're looking for it, you end up noticing a lot more than maybe it, like, I think there's a lot of times where it happens and it just isn't punished, and Golden Guardians was punishing it a lot. But specifically, like, when one of your teammates or two of your teammates is showing on a wave, generally speaking, your jungler and support shouldn't be clearing vision on those timers. You need to wait until the wave is pushed, the laner is no longer in lane, so at least you can threaten that you have multiple people clearing the ward. But what kept happening with TSM is Spica or Shenyi were making a move as if they had like the threat of a teammate behind them, but their teammate was literally just hitting the wave. So they were 5 seconds early or late, depending on how you want to look at it, on so many moves. So they were just really, really disconnected from each other for a lot of that game. And it was really close to costing them the whole win, but it at least is, it's not an easy fix, but at least it's a diagnosis of what's wrong, which I thought was interesting.
So for all you TSM fans, or, you know, people who just want the drama frogs out there, next week's, I think, are just going to be better. If we at least trust that the coaching staff and the players themselves are cognizant of it. Exactly. Yep.
Do you want to talk about more LCS topics before we move to Champions Q?
I think we kind of hit them all.
Yeah, I think so. There was 0-2 weeks for Golden Guardians and CLG. We can talk about them a little bit more next week. They had a rough time. Golden Guardians, I had a lot of hype for them before, like, this week. I still think they're strong. I think they just had an off week. They're very close to winning the TSM game if the Corki package doesn't knock people over a wall. So I wouldn't say the sky is falling for them. But I'm very interested in Champions Q, actually, because the first split of Champions Q is about to end. Monday night, it'll be over.
It's crazy.
But, like, there's $12,000 for first place.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were just going through this.
Before we even got on, I thought it was far less money that was involved.
Yeah. So
when,
like,
I saw how much money, I was like, no shot. This is insane.
Yeah, 12K for first, 8K for second, third and fourth and fifth is all 4K, and then 6th through 10 is 1.6K. So it's $40,000 of prizing every split. But the thing is, there are 3 splits in summer and 3 splits in spring. So there's 6 total splits where they're going to be giving away this amount of money. You'll get points for each split, which will then pay out $25,000 for first in summer and in spring. And then the off-season one will be $30,000 for first. So basically, we were doing the math. And obviously, the same player isn't just going to get first every time. But let's just say, in theory, JoJo just, like, maybe he just stops screaming for EG out of protest because he loves Champion Q so much and he gets volume. He could make $150K. From Champ Q, like, this year, there's $400K of total prizing, but $150K is for first places. That's crazy.
That's crazy. That's wild. Like, I definitely thought it was going to be like, oh, you know, spring split, you get the 12K. Makes sense. You still want the money, but it's not going to define how, like, what you're getting. Like, oh, and I can, no, now you can actually, you'll probably buy a house. It's like, I'm just, which helps. A lot of players that are not in the LCS. Yeah.
Definitely not in LA, but somewhere.
Somewhere. Montana, maybe. but yeah, like, the fact that you can do this just consistently, like, players are going to want to do this for sure, just for this. Like, they will live for this. I'm talking mostly, like, amateur players who already have, you know, aspirations, collegiate players who have aspirations to kind of go far. Not just to get in the LCS, but, like, to kind of put their name out there and make this a living, not just to stream, but to make money off of this. What a game changer.
And it's making me wonder, this is probably, like, a whole nother episode, but, like, what if they didn't do Champ Q and they just gave this money away to solo Q? Would we have as many people playing? It's got to be more, like, it's definitely better practice and has got to feel so much better for all these guys because they are on, like, 10 ping. Like, the ping has got to just feel way better, which I think is a massive boost. But I do wonder, it's like, oh, turns out, just got to throw money at it. Like,
gotta throw money.
And they're in there. Like, there is so much interest for the guys towards the top. And I'm, like, I'm actually interested too. Like, I see, so JoJo is currently in first. He's, like, 90 LP above Ole. But, like, that is not safe if he doesn't play. Because the current rating system, which they say they're going to fix and work on for the next season, is 10 for a win, minus 5 for a loss. So if Ole, and there's going to be 13 hours of champion queue on Monday, where yes. Ole is going to be able to get in like 15 games. So if he just went like 12-3, he'd pass JoJo. So like JoJo's got to play.
Yeah, he can do it.
JoJo, Ole, SRTT, Kaori, so a couple EG players and tied for third, Zven, Kumo, an LLA player called Mia, then RJS, who also streams everything, is eighth, but I also think he's got like the biggest volume. He's played like every possible hour of champ queue.
Yes, he has.
Yeah, and I think he's also played a lot of the jungle, even though he's
definitely played the most. He's definitely played the most. You're right. He's played jungle as well.
Yeah. Tomio from EG, Dokla from COG, and River are tied for 10th. And then my boy Armeo is in 12th, but like 5 LPOA, and Yon is in 14th at 490. So he's got to get in there, man. Even though 10th place is going to be like $1,600, but it's still like a nice little motivation.
Yeah, and like also can give you, I mean, you'll get points off of this regardless. True. If you get like 50th, you'll still get like 5 points, I guess. But if you get into the 10th place margin, you're going to get 20 points, which is double what you would get before that. You'd get 10. So like, it's still like kind of talking about the three splits and the overarching goal.
Yeah.
You still find investment, which is the genius behind the system. The system getting people to just pump out as many games as possible to kind of like get this thing trucking. And then they'll, I'm sure we'll fix the MMR system so that people feel like they're getting even games. But so far, this has just been a wild success.
I do wonder a little bit about volume concerns. So Oracle's Elixir has tracked, you can track games played there if you just go to the Champions queue tab. So let's try and calculate this. JoJo has, he's in first place, but he also has the third most games. He's played 370 games in like a month, right? So when was the first split? The first split was Feb 7th to March 7th, so actually only a month. So 370 games of champ queue, you're going to, on average, scrim 20 games a week.
Yep.
But those are like, there's long reviews in between. So the scrim blocks are usually like 12 to 6. There's like 20 to 30 minutes in between games. I've talked to some coaches. They're like always freaking long in between games. So we're going like 30-minute reviews. Anyway, that's 80 more games a week times 4 to 5. So that's, he's played, oh, sorry, it's not, it's 20 games per week. So it's 80 total scrims, 370 champ queue games. So the volume of games in champ queue versus scrims is not even close. That's 450.
Not even close.
He probably hasn't played any solo queue, and then he has LCS as well. So, I mean, for pure mechanics practice, this is incredible. But
this is a big changer because
the
biggest concerns from all these players is the fact that they would just be able to get the ping. And that you can just practice on this ping. And I'm sure it's been such a blessing for, I would say, foreign players either coming from Europe or from Korea, that they can just play on this ping with, competitive players in mind and then not lose their mind. I'm sure you've had those experiences, but I've also had those experiences with European players that are like 60 ping with solo queue, like one tricks and everything. Like you hear it and they will lose their mind playing this game.
400 games in a month, though. Like, extrapolate that out to 10 months. Like, I don't think I've seen a player with 4,000 solo queue games in a year. Like, this volume just seems so crazy to me.
It's wild, and I do think it'll calm down at a certain point. Not only just when scrims start to kind of ramp up, and we'll see probably, like, people go for triple blocking.
Yeah.
But also, like, just naturally when you start to feel that pressure from, oh, we're getting week 7 and everything's starting to pile up. And so you just will naturally want to play a little less of this and just focus. Actually, maybe we'll ramp up games. But for sure, off-season, you'll see less.
Yeah.
I think off-season, for sure, you'll just see a lot less.
Yeah.
And split 2, maybe. Yeah.
Also, Champions Queue is only open. So it's open from, 7 to 1?
Oh my God, you're right.
It's only 6 hours a night during the weekdays and then 13 hours a day on Monday. I calculated out it's 55 hours a week. So it is a lot of uptime. But I think these guys that are at like 400 games are basically playing the full 55 hours. But then, like, let's say JoJo has only missed like let's say he does 45 hours of champ queue a week. There's 45 hours of champ queue. There's at least, I'm going to say a scrim day from like early meetings to end is at least 7 hours. So you're doing 7 times 4, 28 plus the 40. That's a 68 hour. Then the two LCS stage games, like, man, he's doing nothing else but playing League.
So, he is piling in the work. That's already something we should be giving the credit to, but also we'll see the output. Like once we get to international events, and we always kind of praise and credit, you know, LPL players and LCK players for their mechanics, you know, hopefully our players won't be having to play that game of catch up. And it's not even a game of catch up of like how to play macro properly, but also just mostly how to lane. Laning without the restrictions of, okay, now we're playing on proper ping, so I can actually practice these combos on the champions that I'm playing, will make a difference. And maybe it's a long-term thing. I'm sure it won't just be 1 year for this to make that big of a difference, but it's a first step, and it's making people feel the drive to play the game as much as they are currently.
Awesome. I think that does it for the league portion of JLXP.
There we go.
What is your current NBA take that you want to discuss, Raz?
God. So let me actually just take a quick look at the standings for a sanity check.
Okay.
Because I saw the news.
What news?
You know, with the news, there's, okay, the quick one that I'll hit first is like Ben Simmons not going to be playing that game versus
Definitely
Philly.
Will not play against Philly, they say.
Yeah, will definitely not play against Philly. I mean, regardless of whether or not the whole conditioning thing is true.
Bad.
Yeah, he does not want to deal with that. He does not want to deal with that whatsoever.
I find it hilarious that every time it seems like a clip is, there's no middle ground with Ben Simmons shooting clips. It's either like clearly staged, he drills like 15 in a row, or
in threes preseason time,
or he just bricks like 6 in a row. Like whoever posts these videos always has a clear agenda. The most recent one was like clip of Ben Simmons getting shots up in practice, and there's like LaMarcus Aldridge in the foreground, and like 50 feet back there's Ben Simmons who just like bricks 2 from 8 feet and then walks up to do a layup, and that one goes in. And I'm like, how do these get out there? Like, how is this the footage that gets released?
The funniest thing, we talked about this, the angle in which the camera shot was taken, everybody in the organization has to know who it was.
He's never able
to come back. If he works with that organization, he's getting fired. Like, this is not the hype we want to be creating. So it's wild. And also, I remember, I think Brooklyn is doomed. The last time we talked about this I said that Brooklyn would be in the finals, but then I did not think about the fact that they'll be probably playing against the Raptors in play-ins or something of that nature.
And then Kyrie just can't play.
He just can't play. This is just like not an option. Like, maybe. And also, they had a back-to-back against Toronto, and I know that they didn't have any of their players, including KD and Ben Simmons, and they just got destroyed by Raptors. So like, the Raptors will be at full power, and you'll probably have KD and Ben Simmons, and whether that or not, like, that's enough is going to be the question for a play-in game. But yeah, just not having a player because he's not going to be taking his shots is insane.
Yeah, and then if they win the play-in game, they're in a series probably against either Miami, the 76ers, or the Bucks, which are like not freebies by any means. I still think they got a good chance, though. I think
they have a good chance.
We're 65 games in for them. That leaves 17 more. COVID restrictions are loosening. Like, they're still, they got to be, fingers crossed, that Kyrie will at least be able to play home games.
Yes. Yes.
And
like, we're hearing rumors on that one out there about like that lightening up. Same, I guess, with Toronto, but I still think if you're coming into the country, you're going to have those restrictions on you. So I think he's doomed if he has to come into Toronto. So they just have to pray that the rest of the guys can win those games.
I want you to be my witness on this.
Okay.
I said LeBron was going to drop 50 because the game was on national TV before it happened.
Yep.
And he did. I think that the meme on Reddit was definitely that he was doing it because a Ram was in the building. Like, he popped off with Stafford on the sideline and also with Aaron Donald. But they're still screwed. That team is
in the green
so
room
destroyed.
You said it on your in the Twitter DMs, you like told you he'd get 50 low.
Yeah. But the
That'll
team I still think there's like a good chance they just miss the play-in. Like, I think they're, I'm off.
You're off the hype train?
They're done. They're cooked.
Damn.
They're cooked, and LeBron, I think LeBron is going to win the scoring title. He cannot win the title. It's time to win the scoring title. 37-year-old scoring title.
It's insane.
He's in there.
He's going to do it, and it's really funny because like the current Lakers meme that I see in every like thread is just like, we're losing this game. We're down by 30. And it's like, nah, like LeBron is not getting out of the game. Garbage time. He's getting his 20.
40 minutes.
Paying his 40. He's getting his points, damn. We don't know how long he's playing, how many years he's got in him. He's beating Kareem.
I think it's a stat year for him now at this point. No one will remember this if he's able to get on a good team in the next couple years and win another title. Then he'll have a scoring title. Like the way, this is probably too big of a tangent, but like the way people make the LeBron Jordan arguments, like they get so oversimplified. It's like Jordan's got so many scoring titles.
Yeah.
He's better. And it's like, well, okay, let's talk about all these different details. So just LeBron sees that he's going to get another one just in case.
It's just so hard in my mind for like the Pelicans without Zion, but they did get CJ, or the Trailblazers that just nuked their lineup basically in the trade deadline for them to somehow take over Lakers. But the Lakers are just especially bad right now. So I guess anything is possible.
I guess you're right. Like the Portland Trailblazers are trying to miss the play-in.
Yes. They're trying their hardest to get.
It's going
to
be really hard for the LA to at least not get 10th.
It would be special. So I think for sure they'll be in the play-ins, but there's no way they beat the Clippers. Trailblazers look good, but I feel not Trailblazers, Timberwolves. The Timberwolves look good, but like I don't know. It's hard. It's ridiculous that we'll see what happens.
Okay. Just high level NBA stuff. We're not going to get any deep analysis there, but that's what we think. You got anything else?
There we go. Got nothing on my side.
All right.
Go Raptors, maybe.
Go Raptors.
There we go.
Maybe they can get out of the play-in by just winning some games. They're 3 games behind the Cavs for 6th.
I'm hopeful. Van Vliet hasn't been playing, so they've been on a bit of a slump. Losing 3, and a lot of these losses have been kind of embarrassing, but like, they'll get there. And I think that when Van Vliet is in it, they'll take some wins.
You want to show your shirt?
I don't think Yeah, here we go.
Yeah. Got him.
Got him. We got that championship.
All right. Raz, thanks again for coming on. For those of you watching to the end, thank you very much. Please like, subscribe. Really happy with the growth of the channel so far for JLXP. Also, if you listen on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, I really appreciate you. Still getting good viewership on those platforms as well. I just know most of you watch on YouTube. So keep doing it. We'll see you same time next week and likely for an episode in the middle of the week as well. Next time.